away. That was a surprise, but I kept my hands where they were while it dropped at my feet with a clunk. It might have been a trick to make me grab for it and claim self-defense, with Freemason to furnish eyewitness testimony. Frontier courts didn't always mess with complications like an unloaded firearm.
"What do you want?" asked the rancher, speaking up for the first time. "I don't have much cash on me, and you can't break my watch seven ways."
"We don't want your money, sheep man. We thought you was a payroll wagon."
"You know me?"
"I can smell you."
He nodded to the man who disarmed us, who jacked all the shells out of the Winchester and slid it across the buggy's floorboards.
"Why so generous?" Freemason asked.
"Can't use the weight. Comes a choice betwixt gold and iron, I choose gold."
He socked the Spencer into a scabbard slung from his saddle horn and gathered his reins.
"You best get help for your friend, for what good it does. He was green, or he'd know better than to jump like a jackrabbit when there's guns about."
He backed his horse off the road, then wheeled, followed closely by the others, in the direction we'd been headed. They bent low, raking their spurs for speed, billows of dust erupting from their horses' heels. We could see them a long time before they turned south, away from the road, and shrank from sight. Then a moan from Cherry brought us back to more urgent matter.
"He'll never make it to town," Freemason said.
"He won't make it anyway.
We have to do what we can. There's a line shack in a mile."
He snatched the whip from its socket, wrapped the line snugly around one wrist, and slashed at the mare's hindquarters. Bess was lathered and broken-winded when we reached the nearest gate, and by the time Freemason drew rein before a sway-backed building constructed of local stone with a patchwork roof of mud and straw, she was used up for the week and possibly for life. A pair of smudge-bearded line riders came out to greet us with rifles, and when they recognized their employer, laid them down and helped us carry the lawyer inside. The interior was a mulch of soot and grease and tobacco and the stench of burning dung from the pit at the base of the chimney, where a 2-gallon coffee pot simmered on its hook with a heavy overlay of man. Line shacks are self-contained extensions of ranch headquarters. Because of their remoteness during heavy weather, they're as well stocked as any center of civilization. One of the riders produced medical supplies from an oilcloth pouch, cut away Cherry's blood-drenched shirt with scissors, cleaned the bubbling wound in his chest with alcohol, plucking away threads and pieces of lint with forceps, and discarded several yards of sopping red bandage in the tar bucket he and his partner used for a trash receptacle before the bleeding slowed enough to apply a patch. It was all to comfort the wounded man, like the jug whiskey they gave him from a tin cup, supporting his head with a hand while he drank. For his lungs were filling with blood, and there was nothing else for it but to prop him up with pillows to slow the process and watch as he drowned on dry land. Soon he lapsed into unconsciousness, and at a signal from the rancher, I accompanied him outside while the man who'd attended to Cherry kept an eye on him, and his partner substituted a kettle for the coffee pot in the chimney and coaxed gravy from fatty chunks of mutton with a ladle. I wondered if one or both of them had been among the three hands the governor had pardoned for the murder of a fence cutter from cattle country. They'd looked more comfortable holding those rifles than they did looking after the domestic chores. Bess had been unhitched and stood motionless in the corral, apart from the lineman's mounts, head down and blowing. Freemason, athletic as slight men often are, swung himself over the top rail, seized an empty gunny sack off a nail next to the back door of the shack, and used it to rub the mare down.
"I suppose we can console ourselves those road agents' informants misled them for once," he said. "I've made no new arrangements for a payroll delivery."
I said, "I see no reason to assume the virtue of truth on their behalf. Perhaps you were their target after all."
"For what purpose? They didn't rob me."
"Maybe shooting Mr. Cherry unsettled them."
Shooting that shotgun messenger didn't dissuade them from going ahead and robbing the Overland. Maybe they wanted to shoot Cherry. Ludicrous. Granted, there's an open season on lawyers, especially with that fence-cutting bill out of committee, but they couldn't have known he'd be with me. I didn't know myself until I invited him last night. Who else knew? Apart from whomever Cherry might have spoken to, only my wife. I watched him, down on one knee, scrubbing rivulets of lather from a foreleg. He stopped and looked up at me through the rails. They made a good point about that weapon you carry. I suppose English revolvers are easier to obtain in Denver. I wouldn't know. It's the first revolver I've ever bought. The man who sold it to me said I'd need it for protection from wolves and Red Indians. He must have shown you how to use it. I don't believe any of the men I paid to protect my property could have produced it more quickly. My father told me it isn't enough just to read scripture. One must understand it as well. It occurred to me the same would hold true for a weapon. I practiced quite a bit. I'm surprised you had time left to contemplate the words of our Lord. Can you hit anything with it? Tins and bottles. He rose, flicking dust from the knee of his trousers. These bandits haven't a history of making mistakes. Perhaps I was the target, but when they shot Cherry, they decided it would carry the message as well. Killing me would accomplish nothing. Colleen would appoint someone to manage the ranch in my place, because the alternative would be bankruptcy. If they frightened me off, the fence bill would lose support in Austin, and big cattle will continue to dominate Texas. These are not garden-variety highwaymen. Goodnight and his cronies are paying them to harass me and clear the way to claim all the grazing land for themselves. It seems underhanded. They've never been shy about doing battle out in the open. That was when they were winning, and no one in authority would oppose them. I should flatter myself that I've at least driven them to cover. It does help to explain why you've suffered from these robberies more than anyone, I said. What did you make of the brand on their horses? I saw no brand. I was too busy looking at their weapons. I got a close look when the one who disarmed us came alongside. I looked around for a stick, but good luck finding one in that country. Instead, I used the toe of my shoe to trace a symbol in the dust at my feet. Freemason draped the sweat-soaked gunny sack over the top fence rail and leaned on it as he studied the mark, which disintegrated before our eyes in the incessant wind. In a moment, it was as if it had never existed. "A Star of David," he said. "Do you think they're Jews?" If so, they'd be foolish to advertise it during robberies, given their history. I think it's more likely whoever owns the brand calls it the Double Triangle or something like that. Have you never seen it?
Never.
I know some people with the Stock Raisers Association. They won't let me in, but a band like this is bad business for everyone. If the brand is registered, we'll trace them. The man we'd left with Luther Cherry opened the back door. Freemason looked a question at him, but he turned my way.
"He's awake, preacher, but not for long. He wants you."
I found the lawyer propped into a half-sitting position. He'd bled through his bandages again, draining his face of all color. His lips were moving, but no sound came out. I took off my hat and bent close enough to feel his moist breath on my ear. Freemason and the man who'd come to fetch me stood at the foot of the bed. The other hand continued stirring the kettle over the fire.
"My mother was Catholic."
It took Cherry twice as long to say the words as it takes to write them.
"My father wouldn't have it, but she smuggled it into me. Will you hear my confession?"
I said, "I haven't the authority to forgive you on behalf of God."
"That's all right. I don't believe a priest does either. I have some things that need saying. I don't care if you pass them on.
though I'd take it a kindness if you'd spare my wife.
I can promise that. He spoke for several moments, drawing whistling breaths between words. The man at the foot of the bed leaned forward, but I could barely hear him with his lips nearly touching my ear. His breath seemed to be cooling as I listened, like embers fading in a hearth. At length he stopped talking in mid-sentence. I turned my head to face him. His eyes grew soft, softer. A cloud passed between them, and what lay behind. I lifted my hand and kneaded them shut. My Bible rode in the side pocket of my coat. I took it out, but I didn't open it. "The Lord is my shepherd," I said. "I shall not want." Chapter 21.
"I fail to see why you won't tell me what he told you," Freemason said. "You said yourself he didn't care so long as you kept it from his wife."
"Because I can doesn't mean I should."
"But you're not a priest."
"I avoid discussions of the relative merits and deficiencies of other denominations. However, I hold the seal of the confessional to be the mainstay of the Roman Catholic Church."
"I think you're forgetting I belong to the board that employs you."
"If you want to put it on that basis, it's my Christian duty to spare you the ordeal of dismissing me. I'll submit my resignation."
"Let's not go off half-cocked, brother. You must understand my concerns are professional as well as personal. If you know something about Cherry's behavior during the time he was representing me, it's only natural I'd press you for details."
We were in the sheepman's paneled study, where we'd retired after delivering Luther Cherry's body to the undertaking parlor that held the contract with the town council in cases of death by misadventure. Freemason had sent one of the line riders to ranch headquarters for a wagon to carry the remains. At the same time, he'd sent the other man to Wichita Falls to report the incident to Captain Jordan at Texas Rangers headquarters. That day's overland stage had come and gone, but a good man on a horse would overtake it and pass it. Thought of the overland reminded me of something I'd forgotten.
"Your interests are no more personal than Cherry's," I said. "I can tell you of a thing I saw yesterday morning at the freight office." I recounted the lawyer's argument with the clerk over the rate required to send a special delivery letter to St. Louis.
"Unpleasant, but hardly unusual," Freemason said. "The rates are outrageous, but they're the price of free enterprise. Still, everyone has the right to complain."
Nevertheless, he paid the amount, refusing the lower rate for regular delivery because it would take a few days longer. He made change from a pocketbook.
"That's what it's for. It's also called a change purse."
"Perhaps things are different in Texas, but where I come from, a man who goes to that length to corral every penny is considered parsimonious."
"They're not different. I don't use one myself, lest the men I do business with get the impression I'm hard up for cash. Cherry was cheese paring. I admire that in someone I appoint to help handle my affairs. I fail to see why he should be condemned for it."
I looked humble, or made the effort. "It's not my place to save or condemn. I merely mentioned the episode because he was so quick to decide in favor of paying more for the sake of expediency. He said the letter was for his wife. Surely there was nothing in it so urgent it couldn't wait a few more days."
"I begin to understand you,"
he frowned, drumming his slim, well-kept fingers on a leaf of his towering desk.
"It strikes me someone should ask the clerk in the freight office about the address on the envelope."
"He'd be violating the law if he disclosed it." He didn't appear to be listening.
"You raise the suggestion that Cherry was the squirrel chewing holes in my wall, providing details of my business arrangements to some factotum in St. Louis who forwarded them on to that gang of pirates."
"I wouldn't bear false witness."
"With good reason. Cherry was new to Owen. My problem predates his arrival by months." You told me he'd been active in the firm that represents you a long time before you retained him personally. That would put him in possession of a great deal of privileged information. Fiello, the aged manservant, knocked and entered, carrying a tea set on a tray. His master asked him if Mrs. Freemason had returned from her errands.
"Not yet, sir. Shall I pour?"
"No, set it down and return to your other duties. Let me know when she's back." When the door drew shut, Freemason looked at me. "This isn't a discussion to be conducted over tea. Where do you stand on spirits?"
"I wouldn't presume. I'm told they're an ecclesiastical invention."
"Good man."
He stood and used a key attached to his watch chain to unlock the hidden wall cabinet. I pretended curiosity as if I hadn't seen it before.
"Colleen thinks the old man is a drinker on the sly," he said. "I haven't seen any evidence myself, but she's far more attuned to the domestic arrangements than I, and her attention to detail is impressive. She has a man's brain. I think that's what attracted me to her. She maintains all the books on the ranch. If something were to happen to me, I'm quite certain she could manage the place quite well on her own."
"You must trust her very much."
"A wise man told me you can trust no one or trust everyone and take the same chances. I prefer to err on the side of conservatism." He poured from the bottle of Hermitage. "I was instrumental in preventing Colleen from serving a jail sentence in Waco. She dealt cards there, which is a profession admirably suited to accounting. Between the morning she was freed and the day I proposed marriage, I had her thoroughly investigated by the Pinkertons, who confirmed everything she'd disclosed to me about her past, and a number of things she neglected to mention. I'm a businessman, brother, not a gambler. I never enter into a proposition until I've studied it from all sides and isolated the risk."
Turning from the cabinet, he held out one of the cut crystal glasses. When I reached for it, his free hand lashed out and enclosed my wrist in his iron grip. It was my gun hand.
"That's a pistolier's weapon you carry," he said. "It's been well kept. In order to complete the performance, if you armed yourself at all, you'd lug around some ancient cap-and-ball cannon with rust on the cylinder. But that wouldn't do if you were forced to use it. That's the flaw in any masquerade. To put it over properly, one must become what one appears, rendering the exercise useless."
He smiled in his neat beard.
"Wouldn't you agree, Marshal?"
Chapter 22. "Deputy," I corrected. "I'm not political enough for a presidential appointment." Where'd I tip my hand?
Where didn't you? Your choice of weapons, that history you concocted for yourself, your deportment in general. If I let go of your wrist, will you agree to keep that hand in plain sight?
I nodded. I'd considered throwing my drink in his face to distract him while I went for the scabbard, but I hated to waste good sipping whiskey. He released his grip, poured for himself, and sat down.
"A careful way of speaking and a veil of humility can't obscure the habits of a lifetime," he said. "This morning, when you came to the church door, you glanced up and down the street and scanned the rooftops before you stepped outside. I doubt you were even aware you did it. A man who's spent most of his life shut in with his mother feels no reason to take such precautions. Mind you, I suspected you before that. You have a whiff of brimstone about you. They haven't developed a soap pious enough to scrub it off."
I drank. "I was pretty certain you'd had someone go through my things. I never said I'd been shut in with my mother or even that I had one. That was all in a letter I brought with me when I came."
"It never left the parsonage, only the salient details. I told you I don't invest without investigation. My wife won't remember, but she once made reference to a former acquaintance in law enforcement who had the look of a starved wolf. That's the first impression I had of you, after disregarding the sackcloth and ashes and that collar. Excellent suggestion, that. Few people look beyond a thing so obvious.
Thank you. It almost makes up for the heat rash.
None of this was sufficient to leap to any conclusions, of course. Then I remembered reading of the conspicuous death of a deputy U.S. Marshal of some reputation up in Montana Territory. Your choice of firearms settled the matter. Legends don't overlook such crumbs. You really ought to have left it behind.
I hadn't time to break in a new one and keep up with my Bible studies.
At least you're not the kind that clings to a lie in the face of all evidence. It's refreshing.
I don't ride a horse back into a burning stable.
I wish we'd had this conversation Sunday. It would have saved me postage to Denver. Poor Cherry was right. The rates are confiscatory.
I ran into Fiello at the freight office. I'd guessed he was there to track down Brother Bernard. Freemason rolled liquor on his tongue and swallowed.
Really, I thought what happened between your Judge Blackthorne and me went to rest with the Grant administration. I wouldn't have expected him to carry a grudge.
Grudges aren't like mule packs. The bigger they are, the longer you can carry them.
Still, he's an old political infighter. He knows when it's time to cut your losses and get back to business.
A lot of lawyers lost their case because they thought they could predict him. My mouth went dry, but I resisted raising my glass because my hand might shake. I was close to an explanation of why I was in Texas.
Just what is he after? In 10 years, I've done nothing that would place me in his power. Or is it your mission to adjust that situation? I believe you said something a few moments ago about bearing false witness.
I shot from the hip. Nothing like that. The law's his lasso. He'll take a couple of dallies on it, but he won't break it. Some new evidence has come to light to make that old grudge a little easier to carry.
Fiello knocked, came in at his master's invitation, and reported that Mrs. Freemason had returned. Freemason nodded and dismissed him. When we were alone again, the rancher sat back for the first time and steepled his hands. I knew then I'd misfired. No new evidence can reverse a presidential pardon, he said. Blackthorne didn't tell you anything about our history. I thought you were remarkably circumspect for a man of action. What's your real purpose? I can have you locked up as an impostor on suspicion of your intentions. With all this banditry about, and when information comes back from Denver casting doubt on the existence of a preacher named Sebastian, no one will question your incarceration for weeks.
I've been in jail before.
I was making time to think. Whatever was in the judge's mind, it would collapse under its own weight while I was behind bars, and with no way to get in touch with him, I'd be stuck counting stones in the walls while the blue bandanas were free to hare around shooting cowhands and shotgun messengers, and generally breaking the peace.
I drank, no tremors, and set aside my glass. Until I came here, I didn't even know you and Blackthorne had a history. The first time I saw your name was when I read it on your telegram inviting Brother Bernard to serve as pastor. I was sent to investigate the Panhandle robberies.
That's a tale. Every one of them took place outside his jurisdiction.
Strictly speaking, his jurisdiction covers all crimes against the United States. Two of the robberies involved the mail. Also, he's concerned that, left to its own devices, this band will eventually expand their depredations to Montana Territory. He'd rather fight them on the high plains than in Virginia City.
He said that?
He did.
Did you believe him?
I wasn't required to.
I don't believe you.
Let's talk about something else then. For what crime were you pardoned by President Grant?
He checked that without blinking. You said you knew nothing about my connection with Blackthorne until you came here. Who told you? I was busy saying nothing when Colleen Freemason entered without knocking. Clearly, she'd been listening outside the door.
I told him, Richard.
She was dressed fetchingly in a straw hat with a curled brim and feathers, a trim tweed suit over a plain shirtwaist, black and ivory patent leather pumps, and black felt gloves with ivory buttons. Her cheeks were flushed from the wind. As she was naturally high-colored, she might have stepped out of a Renaissance painting and come there by way of a Victorian dress shop. She was staring at me, accusingly or not, I could never tell.
Indeed, Freemason said, the past becomes the present. That wasn't our arrangement. Nothing's changed. I made the same error you did. I assumed he was here to try to snare you in some way. From what I just overheard, you told him more than I did.
I turned my attention from her, which was always a chore. Since you did, you might as well tell me the rest. I've been floundering in the dark since before I left Helena. Freemason frowned, then pulled his hands apart and placed them on the arms of his chair. His mouth opened. Colleen stepped close and placed a gloved hand on his shoulder.
The past is not the present.
She was still looking at me.
We've made our home here. We've obeyed the law, and Richard has assisted it. You're the one who's sailing under false colors. We owe you nothing.
A pretty speech, said her husband. I'd be more impressed if you'd told me his colors were false. Have you taken up where you left off?
She snatched away her hand as if he'd bitten it. I anted in. She made it clear the last time we spoke in this room there'd be none of that. I swore my business here had nothing to do with you and Blackthorne and asked her to keep the secret. Too many people already knew, and there was no telling what someone else might guess if your attitude toward me was any different from what was expected between a church director and his parson. Not wanting to see a man murdered in the course of his work and having serious feelings for him aren't the same thing.
We both have secrets, Richard. We agreed we weren't each other's confessor.
A fine match.
He swirled the contents of his glass, then tossed them back like any hand fresh off the trail. Then he got up to refill.
Pour me one as well.
Colleen stripped off her gloves and drew the pin from her hat. I keep coming back to why those bandits were waiting for us, I said, when we were all seated. Until now, they've made no mistakes. Their sources have been too good. Freemason still looked sour, and it had only a little to do with what had happened near his ranch.
Everyone puts a foot wrong sometimes. I married a woman I can't trust.
I don't care. You're forgetting I'm not really a minister. One mistake is possible, but this was also the first time they've struck this close to Owen. Their avoiding it is what brought me here in the first place. They must have had a compelling reason to break that cardinal rule. Whenever something like that happens, I ask myself what recent change might have brought it about.
That would be you.
Colleen, informed of the day's events, sat upright in a chintz-covered chair, the only remotely feminine object in the room and obviously kept for her use. She held her glass at bodice level with the surface of the liquid as flat as a sheltered pond.
You're Owen's newest resident.
Just barely. Luther Cherry arrived just before me.
You keep hopping on Cherry, Freemason said. He's dead.
Another mistake. He made a grab for his briefcase when it slid off his lap. He was under the gun at the time, and when you have someone in that position, the shooter's nerves are right up there on top. Shooting him was a natural reaction on the part of the man with the Spencer.
Also disastrous, if you insist on believing that Cherry was their Trojan horse. That makes three mistakes. What are the odds of that happening, given their record so far?
Colleen's the card player, I said. She shook her head and sipped. I'd fold rather than bet against them. It was no accident.
I said, I think it was. Killing him, I mean. Everything else was planned. They weren't expecting a payroll wagon. That was just an excuse. Cherry was just settling in, and Freemason hadn't made it a secret he suspected he had a traitor in his employ. What better way to raise their man inside above suspicion than to shoot him during an attempted robbery right in front of his employer?
By God! Freemason flushed deep copper, his glass hovering beneath his chin. By God!
The man I'll call Spencer meant to wing him, I went on. But that's not an exact science when you're on horseback and your target's in motion. Either his aim was off or Cherry moved in the wrong direction. The bullet pierced a lung instead of just an arm. The sheepman remembered his drink and took a long draft.
Are frontier brigands capable of such Machiavellian measures?
The organized ones are, I said. We're up against a bigger operation than any of us thought. If I'm right about that special delivery letter Cherry sent to St. Louis, it means he had a contact there who forwarded privileged information on to whoever the blue bandanas report to in this area. Someone's out to break you, and he's going to a hell of a lot of expense to do it.
The cattle trade, he said. That fence-cutting bill has them scared. If they manage to destroy me, no one will ever enforce it, and there will be no sheep ranchers safe in the state of Texas.
I emptied my glass and set it down. Cattlemen are too busy running their own spreads to act in concert. Maybe they've appointed someone, but whoever's behind the robberies has nothing else on his plate to distract him.
I'll trace that letter Cherry made so much fuss about.
You can do that. Chances are he sent it to someone at the legal firm you got him from who can claim it was just some unfinished business. Certainly he'll have destroyed the evidence and all we'll have is Cherry's lie that he was writing his wife.
Maybe his wife is the go-between.
Both of us looked at Colleen, whose chin elevated an inch in defense of her theory. She isn't, I said.
How do you know? She asked.
Because when he confessed to conspiring against Freemason, he asked me to say nothing of it to her. Chapter 23. Freemason toyed with his glass.
Why didn't you tell me what he said the first time I asked? What was the point of pretending to speculate he died as a result of his own manipulations?
That part was speculation, I said. He didn't live long enough to get around to it. As for the rest, I wasn't sure he was alone. I'm still not, but based on this conversation, I'm reasonably satisfied it isn't your wife. Colleen appeared unmoved, but so does the outside of a volcano.
What did I say to convince you I'm not?
Nothing. If you had, you'd still be under suspicion. It's never easy to tell when you're bluffing. But the higher the stakes, the harder you push a pair of deuces. You didn't say a word when your husband said he couldn't trust you. If ever there was a time for a traitor to prove herself loyal, that was it.
God, but you're a bastard.
I've worked for Blackthorne a long time. Some of it was bound to rub off. A clock outside the door chimed the hour. We'd been locked up most of the day. I looked at Freemason. You'll see to Cherry's arrangements, I suppose. No doubt his wife will want to bury him in St. Louis.
I ought to throw his carcass into the creek, but I've become a respectable man. I'll play the generous benefactor. The damage is done. Nothing can be gained by blackening his memory. And what will you be about meanwhile?
Sunday is Easter. I've a sermon to prepare. I rose. Two pairs of eyes followed me. Freemason said,
You intend to continue as Brother Bernard? Why? Without Cherry, the bandanas have no hole card. The first time they act on their own, they'll blunder into the hands of the Rangers, as like as not.
I said I'm not sure he was alone.
In any case, my orders are to break them up or bring them to justice. Also, the church needs a pastor.
Where will you start?
He asked.
Matthew 26.
You're trying my patience, deputy.
Brother, I said, let's not slip into any bad habits. I'm going to start by tracing that Star brand. They've got as good an eye for horseflesh as any outlaw gang. The trader who sold 7 premium mounts at a crack will remember who he sold them to. He said,
the brand might not be registered. Smaller ranches crop up all the time. The ranchers are too busy getting established to bother right away, and the registrars can't keep up with the rest.
You don't get animals like that from a startup outfit. Someone had time to breed them. The brand has to be on file somewhere.
Still, that's a lot of legwork for one man.
If you're trying to find out how I operate, you're wasting my time as well as yours. He flushed again.
You don't care who you insult, do you?
Colleen said.
He has rules about which questions to answer honestly when he's playing a role, Richard. He likes to keep his lies in a separate pile, and he doesn't trust anyone.
I shook my head.
You can trust everyone and be betrayed, or no one and betray yourself. My policy is to shoot straight down the middle.
Even so, Freemason said, not trusting is a quality a man can do worse than to acquire.
The old Mexican came in after knocking, hesitated when he saw we were all standing, and spoke in a low tone to Freemason, who bent his head to listen.
Tell him to come in.
Fiello ghosted out, leaving the door open for the visitor. Captain Jordan of the Texas Rangers stood taller than he sat, despite bowed legs and a slight shoulder stoop. He wore what appeared to be the same faded blue flannel shirt, its pockets stuffed with smoking material, with leather-reinforced riding trousers stuffed into the tops of tall stovepipe boots, long-roweled Mexican spurs jingling behind the heels. He took off his pinch hat, revealing a bald crown cream-colored to the line where the hat ended and his tan began. He smelled of the sweat of horse and man. The steel-shot eyes looked tired, and a stubble had sprouted on his chin, as white as his handlebars. He introduced himself, grasped the sheepman's hand, and nodded to Colleen. When Freemason presented me, the ranger showed no recognition. His grip would be the last thing about him to give out.
What luck? Freemason asked.
Same as at Whitehorse, Jordan said. Tracks turned into the creek and got lost in the tangle from the last herd that crossed. They know this country all right. Can't figure out what made them steer so wide of it before this.
Brother Bernard has a theory about that, began Freemason, only to abandon the rest at a look from me.
I'm always open to spiritual guidance, Jordan nailed me with his gaze.
I smiled an apology.
That's the only kind I can offer. I suggested that poor Mr. Cherry may have been the reason the gang singled us out. Any special reason, or does God speak just to you?
It was an experience new to me, that moment. 2 men working overtime to keep a third from knowing the full truth about one of them, while the third pretended not to know it already. The frontier was no longer the simple place it used to be. I told him of the lawyer's last words and my thought that he'd engineered his own wounding in order to lift suspicion from himself. Jordan took it all in without comment. Colleen excused herself as a non-witness and left us. The captain declined a drink, stuffed and lit his pipe, and gave us a detailed account of his quest, beginning with the message Freemason had sent him in Wichita Falls by way of the rider from the ranch. He and his small command had traded their lathered mounts for fresh ones Freemason had made available for them at the line shack and followed the trail to extinction. He'd left his men to rest in town while he came to the house to report and gather information.
What encouragement can you offer that I won't end up fighting this band over my last dollar? Asked the rancher.
Not knowing how many you got, I can't answer. If the brother's right, a cockeyed scheme like that is a sign they're losing their smarts. However, I ain't what you might call a religious man. The evidence of things unseen don't hold up in San Antonio.
What's the reward on these fellows' capture or death?
500 a head.
I'll add 100 each and see if I can get the Stock Raisers Association to double it.
That ought to make things right lively. If I had a blue bandana, I'd burn it. Jordan stood and offered his hand. I'd like to ask the brother a couple of questions. Just us. He's the one Cherry talked to. He might remember a thing or two more in a place where he's comfortable.
You don't have to ask my permission, Captain. That's up to Brother Bernard.
I'm afraid I can't tell you anything I haven't, Captain.
His lips parted to let something out, but I jigged my eyes right and left, hoping he wasn't an unsubtle man. He drew a breath and stirred his handlebars on the exhale.
Well, if you can't take a preacher at his word, who can you? It's getting late, and I don't trust that stage trail. I'll spread my roll outside town and start back at first light. This trail won't get no warmer.
I've got spare rooms gathering dust, Freemason said. I'd consider it a favor if you'd put up here. Mrs. Freemason and I don't get many visitors. Pariahs, don't you know, under the veneer of respect.
I'll remember you ask next time. Just now I got men getting set to stretch out on bare panhandle. It wouldn't set right with them to know I spent the night on feathers.
We left that house. At the bottom of the long flight of steps, Jordan and I shook hands.
The parsonage behind the church, I said. After dark, I'll leave the back door off the latch.
He didn't even nod, although I could feel the heat of curiosity glowing deep in those burnished eyes. We turned in opposite directions. As I did so, I caught a glimpse of a curtain stirring in an upstairs window of the mansion. When she'd moved in, Colleen would have been sure to secure herself a room with the best view of the town. The sun was long gone when someone tapped at the back door of the parsonage. I'd moved the lamp in the little sitting room to a spot where it wouldn't outline the opening, and closed and latched the door behind him quickly. The sacking someone had put up to serve for curtains masked the windows.
I don't see the need, Jordan said when we were seated.
I'd given him the rocking chair, filled two tin cups from the bottle I'd brought from Helena, and drawn the straight back close so we could talk quietly. There didn't have to be professional spies. The Fiellos and Mrs. McIlvaines of the world have soft souls and long ears.
I thought I did a fair job of explaining the palaver.
I've got my reasons, I said. They don't have to make sense to anyone but me. He didn't pursue the point, and my respect for him went up another healthy notch. He tipped his hat as far back as only a Texan can without it falling off.
I'd as lief wrestle barbed wire in the dark as have another meet like that one at Freemason's. Just who knows what.
His wife and I have a history. She kept her mouth shut, but he figured it out based on some things she'd told him in the past. Neither of them knows you and I have met before. I'd like to keep it that way for a while. People let down their guard when they think one man is all they have to worry about.
I knowed something was in the wind when you gave me the evil eye there at the finish. First Cherry, now his boss. How big is this bunch?
I don't know, but Cherry wasn't in it. He drank from his cup, his eyes fixed on mine above the rim.
Why would a man lie his way into hell with his last breath? And how do you know he did?
I don't. He confessed, but not to informing on Freemason's plans. He wanted me to know he'd strayed once from his marriage.
It happened just the one time, he said, back in St. Louis, but he didn't want to die with it on his conscience. He asked me not to tell his wife. I think what happened had something to do with why he accepted Freemason's invitation to set up shop here in Texas. He was talking to the caller, I went on. I'll probably draw another month in purgatory for it. That was the shebang? He jumped the traces? If there was anything else, he didn't last long enough to share it. In that situation, you lead with the sin that's most on your mind. So why did you tell Freemason? Oh. The dawn appeared to break. He nodded. That's why I came in the back way. How sure are you? Not enough to take any sort of action. Subtracting Cherry, it's the only explanation for what happened out on the road, but I can't take that to Helena. Anyway, you can see why I didn't want anyone to think I had the chance to pass on what I knew to the Rangers. I have to be the lightning rod. A lightning rod can take a lot of hits. With a man, all it takes is one. I've been struck before. He shook his leonine head. I gotta tell you, this is one game of poker where you're safer to share your cards. The decks pass through too many hands as it is. I lifted my cup but didn't drink. I tapped a finger on the rim and lowered it. I've a strong hunch you can hold a secret till it sprouts leaves, but my hunches don't always turn out. It has to stop somewhere. I can't even trust my friends with what I plan to do next. Lone wolves are easier to kill, just so you know. That doesn't mean it's easy. But if it happens, it means I figured right. The rest will be up to you. He got out his pipe, leaving the makings in his pocket. He slid the stem along his lower lip, watching me through the thickets of creases that surrounded his eyes. I don't mind dying while I'm moving forward. I'd sure as hell hate it while I'm going the other direction. They don't pay me enough to do it standing still. What do they pay you up there? Free burial, same as you. Did you bring anything for me? Thought you'd ask. Since I was fixing to be in the neighborhood, I took it along. He gave me a thick fold of yellow paper from the flap pocket where he kept his tobacco pouch. I unfolded it. It was a garble of unrelated words consuming several pages of Western Union script signed H.A.B. Harlan A. Blackthorne's personal code was more complex than the one I'd worked out with Jordan, but it was a lot less chatty in appearance. Anyone who saw it would know immediately it contained confidential information. I was relieved to see it was addressed to the Rangers station and not Bernard Sebastian. Anything for me? Jordan asked. I don't know yet. It takes time to work out. I'll get word to you if there is. What you fixin' to do now? Fort up here and wait? I'd just as soon post my plans on the church bulletin board. The biggest day in the Christian year is coming up. I expect a full house Sunday, and I have to get ready for it. I was you, I'd sling a skillet around my neck front and back. So far, the Lord God Jesus is the only one ever clumb back up out of the grave come Easter. Well, I died up north, and here I sit. Maybe he's got another miracle for me in his pocket. Chapter 24. The lamp was guttering when I left off translating the judge's response to my question about Freemason and turned in. I finished in the morning, but by then I'd already learned enough to piece together the rest. The old bastard behind the bench had been wise to wait until I was 1,000 miles away before he opened Pandora's box. I worked on my Easter sermon over coffee, ate noon dinner at the Panhandle, where Charlie Sweet was too busy waiting tables to exchange more than a couple of friendly words, and made my first two missionary stops, to the Alamo and the Old Granada saloons, where the cowhands and the sheephands did their respective drinking.
In the Alamo, the bartender, a stove-up old waddy with a rolling limp and a permanent squint, gave me a look intended for a natural enemy, and my collar made the customers nervous, anticipating a weekday sermon. But I put them all back on their heels by buying drinks for the men I stood with at the bar while ordering well water for myself. On the second round, I moved my glass, leaving a wet ring on the glossy cherry wood, and traced a pair of intersecting triangles with my finger. I asked the men at my right and left if they'd seen a brand that looked like it. Each man looked closely, traded his position with the others to give them a view, and shook his head. The bartender finished drawing a beer, came over, and wiped away the symbol with his rag, muttering something that sounded like Hebrew. That threw me a little. I drew the same blank at the old Granada, where a pastoral engraving of a bearded shepherd and his flock hung above the bottles of Busthead. Two of the sheep hands there saw the mark's resemblance to the Star of David, but no one had seen it in the flesh. By then, the local meeting place of the Texas Stock Raisers Association, which occupied the second floor of the Elks Lodge, had opened its doors for dinner. The gatekeeper, a Prussian in a cutthroat collar with a straight back and military whiskers, sat me on a hard bench inside the entryway and kept me waiting for a half hour while he checked in diners. Then, as the flow ebbed, sent a waiter to the little club library for a brand book. I spread it open on my knees, turned page after page of crudely drawn insignia, and found exactly what I'd expected. Nothing. For whatever reason, possibly one as harmless as its owner hadn't registered in time to make that year's record, the spread where the bandits' horses were raised didn't appear to exist in the eyes of the ranching establishment. That left me as heavy as ever on suspicion, but as light as usual on evidence. The First Unitarian was packed for the second Sunday in a row, which I attributed more to the holiness of the day than to my skills as a spellbinder, although I flattered myself that I hadn't driven anyone into the arms of the Methodists. Richard and Colleen Freemason were in their customary pew up front. A brass plate on the end of the backrest bore witness to their contribution in its construction, as did the others celebrating other donors, but in their case, the Masonic compass and square took the place of a name. I saw other familiar faces as well as some new ones among the worshippers standing in the back. The lay volunteer circulating the collection plate had to dump his load in the old Wells Fargo box on the platform behind the pulpit and go back for seconds. There was a new coat of paint there and roof repairs. I never was in a house of God that wasn't stumping for a new roof. Church shingles take a double beating, from rain above and prayers below. I'd gone through the portfolio of sermons Eldred Griffin had placed in my charge and made a risky choice. The text rejected the common view of Judas's betrayal of Jesus as villainy, transforming him into a kind of flawed, tragic hero who, when he realized the enormity of his transgression, had chosen to take his own life rather than to confess and repent, thus sentencing himself to an eternity in hell without parole. It fell short of expiating his guilt, but it hinted at personal redemption. As originally written, the sermon bordered on heresy. I was next to certain that Griffin had composed it after his own fall from grace, with no intention of ever reading it in public, and as such it required editing to avoid having myself nailed to the sorry crooked wooden sticks that West Texas had to offer in the way of a cross. I laid in the conventional condemnation of Iscariot and powdered it lightly with the defrocked priest's mercy, leavening out the sardonic quality with which it was drenched. I don't know why I made the selection, except I was already out on a limb holding an anvil, and an ounce this way or that didn't matter. Whatever happened, I'd presided over my last service in Owen. There was a short silence after I finished, but no murmurs. And when I called for "Lead, Kindly Light," everyone in the congregation joined in. "A bold piece." Freemason took my hand at the door. He looked puzzled. "Do you always fly this close to the flame?"
The man who wrote it showed me how close is too close. There was now no reason to pretend authorship.
You must tell me about him sometime.
He wouldn't like it. He's bent on disappearance.
Fugitive?
Yes, I think that describes him. We were speaking low, but he leaned in close and dropped his voice almost to a whisper.
What luck tracing that brand?
It's not in the book, and none of the ranch hands I talked to remember seeing it.
It must be a pirate outfit.
They comb other spreads for mares with foals too young for branding, pair the mares' hooves to the quick so they can't wander far, and when the foals are ready to wean, they rustle them and burn their own mark. It's as if the animals never existed. A fully grown unbranded horse invites investigation, but registering the brand involves answering too many questions. No one knows just how many such ranches exist. It's an impossible quest.
Those are the ones I usually get.
You're not dissuaded.
I looked at him, but he was a hard man to read.
Do you want me to be?
I think it's too much for one man. Your death would weigh heavily on my conscience.
Jordan and his rangers are working on that brand. But they're spread thin themselves. I'm thinking of asking Judge Blackthorne to lean on the governor to put every available company on the job.
That's wise, but why go so far around the barn? I'm sure I can persuade Ireland to see reason. That brand is the first thing we've found that can provide a link to the man responsible for these raids.
With you applying pressure from below and Blackthorne applying it from above, I don't see how he can refuse the accommodation.
At least let me send a rider to Wichita Falls with your message. The Overland proceeds at its own pace.
I'll use both, in case one or the other is waylaid.
We regarded each other. It was the biggest time waster anyone could imagine, even on a Sunday, two men talking circles around the thing they both knew. Colleen interrupted the game. In honor of the day, she wore a purple velvet dress with a hat to match, trailing a broad yellow ribbon down her back to her waist. In one kid glove, she clutched a closed parasol, yellow with purple trim.
Once again, Richard, you're holding up the line.
She offered me her free hand.
Another intriguing sermon. A bit cosmopolitan for Owen, don't you think? The people around here prefer their bad men painted in black with thick strokes.
I met her blue gaze, harder than Jordan's, more opaque than Freemason's.
I like purple. She smiled.
What a pretty compliment.
They moved on. The friendly freight office clerk shook my hand, wrenching me from my reflections. His face was troubled.
I was raised to love Jesus and hate Judas. Now I don't know what to think.
Hate is the devil's seed, I said. That seemed to lift his spirits. My reviews were mixed. I could tell by the silences as well as by the remarks. The man who had snored through most of my first services wrung my palm and gave me high marks for preaching against sin. Plainly, he'd awakened just in time to join the exodus for the door. Some people who'd stopped to greet me last Sunday swept on past the line without pausing. I didn't expect them back, even if I thought I'd be back myself. I made mental note of everything to report to Griffin, who might be interested to know the reaction, even though I was sure it wouldn't surprise him. I felt an indifference bordering on atheism. It had been important that my debut was positive enough to assure me some time in the community. Whether I left it with a sour taste in its mouth signified nothing. One way or the other, my time in Owen was growing short. For a time after the last carriage creaked away, I stood at the pulpit pretending to make corrections in the margins of my notes while Mrs. McIlvain's broom swished relentlessly in the corners. My pencil drew meaningless coils in the fool's cap, unconsciously imitating the patterns of dust turning in the shortening shafts of sunlight coming through the windows.
They circled patiently, killing time as they waited for the bristles to stop moving so they could settle. It seemed God's plan that there should be dust, and that any attempt to banish it from his place on earth was doomed from the start. But housekeepers, too, have a patron saint, so their efforts carry some kind of endorsement. Everyone seemed to have one, except lawmen posing as ministers of the faith. I knew because I'd looked it up. Nomads of the desert have one, so do nurses and the sick, innkeepers, storytellers, the desperate, fishermen, even thieves. Impostors alone are without representation. What did it matter what miracles you accomplished for the United States District Court if they condemned you in the court of heaven? The assignment had gotten under my skin worse than all the others. I'd flogged whiskey and mucked out stalls for cover, been a Cheyenne slave and shared a cell with a matricide. Rotten work, but you can scrub off the stink of sour mash, recover from prison food, and a good laundress can boil the manure stains out of your clothes. In time, exposure to other peoples and their ways can even restore your belief in the basic humanity of every race. Everything was reversible, except Moses and Ezekiel and Ruth and Solomon.